It's located in southeastern Cuba, on the coast of Guantanamo Bay.
Ese es un territorio de Cuba ilegalmente ocupado.
In 2002, the first detainees were transferred there, hooded, shackled, and masked, most of them without charge or a criminal trial.
It's very easy to do whatever they want to do with these prisoners without anybody looking, supervising, or controlling what's happening there.
Since then, reports of secret detentions, torture, and suicides have hit the headlines time and time again.
I was being dragged through the mud by American soldiers and being punched and kicked, stripped naked again, and photographed and shackled and spat on.
So, that's Gitmo.
This is an exclusive report on Gitmo, only on Press TV.
Guantanamo Bay is a bay located in Guantanamo Province at the southeastern end of Cuba. The steep hills which surrounded it create an enclave which cuts the bay off from its immediate hinterland. It is home to the U.S.-governed Guantanamo Bay detention camp, which has made news headlines in recent years. But this strategic bay has had a long, bitter history. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and you're watching Aperture. The United States assumed territorial control over the southern portion of Guantanamo Bay under the 1903 Cuban-American Treaty. The U.S. exercises complete jurisdiction and control over this territory. The current government of Cuba regards the U.S. presence in Guantanamo Bay as illegal and insists the Cuban-American Treaty was obtained by threat of force in violation of international law. In the first part of today's exclusive Press TV documentary, we will look into the long, troubled history of Guantanamo Bay. Stay with us.
Guantanamo Bay. It's a U.S. Navy base, but it's in Cuba in a leased piece of land.
Ese es un territorio de Cuba ilegalmente ocupado.
La inmensa mayoría de la población cubana están en contra de la perpetuación de la presencia de Estados Unidos en Guantánamo.
La hostilidad desde la base naval de Guantánamo ha sido constante. Llegó a utilizarse como un posible pretexto para la intervención militar en Cuba.
Well, the naval base in Guantanamo represents what was wrong about Cuban-U.S. relations.
So, that's Gitmo.
La idea de la anexión de Cuba a los Estados Unidos, el territorio de la isla de Cuba a Estados Unidos, es una idea vieja en la política de los gobiernos de los Estados Unidos. Esta política la siguieron todos los presidentes norteamericanos del siglo XIX y tuvieron siempre la ambición de apoderarse de Cuba por lo que Cuba representaba geopolíticamente en la estrategia que Estados Unidos, la estrategia expansionista que Estados Unidos estaba trazando hacia el continente.
En 24 de febrero de 1895 estalla la guerra de liberación de Cuba, la guerra por la independencia. Se desarrollaban de manera exitosa las operaciones militares a favor de los cubanos contra España. Y a partir de ahí se empieza a mover la maquinaria militar y política de Estados Unidos para crear las condiciones para intervenir en Cuba.
La decisión de Estados Unidos de intervenir en la guerra de Cuba estaba ya decidido por el gobierno de los Estados Unidos. Entonces hacía falta un pretexto. Y ese pretexto fue la explosión del Maine. Los norteamericanos acusaron primero a los cubanos de haber colocado una mina para explotar el barco. Después acusaron a España de haber sido la que había provocado la explosión del barco cuando el gobierno español en ese momento le estaba dando una recepción a la oficialidad del propio barco. La historia lo que sí nos deja bien claro es que ese fue el pretexto que utilizó Estados Unidos para consumar su ambición de apoderarse de la isla de Cuba.
Guantánamo es una de las cuatro bahías de bolsa más grandes que tiene Cuba. una bahía con un gran espacio y con una endecha. Esto tiene una ventaja no solamente para el suministro de combustible, sino que la zona misma que está frente a Guantánamo, frente a la boca de la bahía, se convirtió en un perfecto polígono para hacer ejercicios navales.
Las grandes potencias navales del mundo, Inglaterra, Francia, España, Holanda, habían detectado que la bahía de Guantánamo era una bahía privilegiada por sus condiciones físicas en el área del Caribe. Y por eso, antes de desplegar sus tropas en Cuba, lo primero que hicieron fue ocupar la bahía de Guantánamo.
O sea, es importante que antes de que existiera la base ya había una ocupación militar de ese territorio.
In those days, you had a lot of coal and oil-burning ships, so it was primarily a good coal fueling station for the U.S. Navy. So that's why we wanted to keep it.
Los americanos amenazaron con que no retiraban su ejército de ocupación y por lo tanto no le otorgaban la independencia a Cuba si no se aprobaba la enmienda Platt.
Uno de los puntos de la enmienda Platt es la concesión de estaciones navales y bases para el suministro de carbón.
En el momento que se firmó la base naval, hay una carta famosa del gobernador norteamericano de la isla, el general Leonard Wood, en que decía: o firman la base naval o no nos vamos.
The treaty being drafted in a permanent way, there is no exit clause or termination clause. It only says that in order to terminate the treaty, both sides have to agree. So that means that even if Cuba wanted to eliminate the base, it couldn't, because the United States would argue, I have to agree.
Por consiguiente, es un alquiler totalmente anómalo. Es como tener a alguien en la casa con una habitación rentada y que esa persona pueda permanecer para siempre, si quiere, mientras quiera permanecer en ese lugar.
Y la enmienda establecía, le concedía el derecho al gobierno de los Estados Unidos a intervenir militarmente en Cuba siempre que considerara que sus intereses estaban en peligro. Cuando hablamos de la intervención desde la base naval de Guantánamo, hay intervenciones directas en las intervenciones militares de 1906, de 1912 y de 1917.
Con el pretexto de proteger los intereses económicos norteamericanos y proteger las vidas, entre comillas, de los ciudadanos norteamericanos que residen en Cuba. De esta manera, en 1906, cuando el presidente Estrada Palma quiere reelegirse, y surge una situación convulsa nacional, el ejército norteamericano traspasa la frontera de la base naval.
Lo mismo pasó en 1912, cuando se produce en Cuba el movimiento de los independientes de color, un movimiento de hombres de la raza de color que se sintieron extraordinariamente marginados y se lanzaron a buscar sus derechos por las armas.
En el año 1917 vuelve a ocurrir un movimiento interno que pasa a la historia como la chambelona. Estados Unidos interviene por tercera vez empleando el territorio de la base naval de Guantánamo.
Es muy poco conocido que durante el año 1917 en Cuba Estados Unidos estableció un contingente militar de ocupación de 35.000 efectivos. 35.000 efectivos para una isla pequeña. En aquella época la población cubana quizás rebasara un poco más de un millón de habitantes. Y 35.000 efectivos implica la presencia militar norteamericana en todo el país.
A lo largo del siglo XX, el ejército norteamericano empleó ampliamente la base naval de Guantánamo para intervenir países centroamericanos y pueblos del Caribe. Y por lo tanto presionar cualquier movimiento de liberación nacional que surgiera.
Guantánamo era en ese momento una bahía que era esencial en su política geoestratégica junto con Puerto Rico. O sea, hacer un triángulo estratégico entre Guantánamo, Puerto Rico y Panamá.
And the Panama Canal was also an American military occupation zone. So the base was designed to support the military occupation of Panama and the military control of the Panama Canal by the United States Navy.
Una de las intervenciones más importantes o más grandes que hizo Estados Unidos tomando la base naval de Guantánamo como punto de partida fue la intervención de 1914 en México. De la base naval de Guantánamo salieron contingentes militares a ocupar Haití. De la base naval de Guantánamo salieron contingentes militares a luchar contra Sandino en Nicaragua. Salieron contingentes militares a desembarcar en República Dominicana. Quizás habría que estudiar a profundidad qué papel han tenido otras bases militares norteamericanas en el mundo. Porque si bien las bases militares norteamericanas en Europa durante la Guerra Fría tenían la idea de la contención del comunismo, las bases norteamericanas en Asia tenían la idea, en Japón, Corea, de contener al comunismo, como llamaban ellos, el expansionismo chino, el expansionismo coreano. La base naval norteamericana en Guantánamo ha sido generadora de precisamente de agresiones contra el resto del continente. No creo que haya otra base militar norteamericana en el mundo que haya participado en tantas intervenciones militares en todos los países.
Cuando se produce el golpe de Estado del general Batista en marzo de 1952, fue reconocido rápidamente por los Estados Unidos.
Fulgencio Batista era para los norteamericanos su hombre en Cuba. Así lo habían ellos categorizado y así lo habían evaluado siempre. Era el mejor defensor de los intereses de Estados Unidos en Cuba.
Pasa al país una situación de guerra y se constituye la primera guerrilla en la Sierra Maestra.
Batista was murdering a lot of people and there was a lot of outcry in the United States for that purpose.
Y presionado por la opinión pública mundial, los Estados Unidos se ve obligado a aplicar un embargo a la entrega de materiales bélicos al ejército de Batista.
When the State Department insisted that there be an embargo on weapons to Batista, the Batista Air Force started to be supplied with weapons in Guantánamo.
Allí aterrizan los aviones de bombardero y otro tipo de aviones militares de Batista que cargan metrallas y bombas, incluso el empleo de bombas napalm, se reabastecen de combustible y posteriormente elevan vuelo para bombardear los poblados campesinos y los campamentos del ejército rebelde.
Yo viví un bombardeo de la aviación de Batista en diciembre de 1958, el pueblo donde yo nací, Cabayguán. Bombardearon los alrededores de ese pueblo, ametrallaron poblaciones campesinas y aterrorizaron a la población, porque no hay nada más terrorífico que sentir en el medio de la noche el motor de un avión que viene a bombardear.
Esto motivó que en una operación de propaganda armada, podemos llamarle así, se preparara por el comandante Raúl Castro la llamada operación antiaérea.
Es el momento en que son detenidos 23 marines norteamericanos. Al regreso son detenidos en la carretera que comunica con la base naval de Guantánamo.
Aquello fue una operación muy rápida, de muy corto tiempo, y Fidel le dio la orden a Raúl de que cerrara la operación para evitar darle un pretexto más al gobierno de los Estados Unidos para intervenir militarmente en Cuba.
Hasta la dictadura de Batista de 1952-1958, este fue o parte de la colaboración militar entre Cuba y los Estados Unidos, y estaban ahí cuando el ejército rebelde entró en La Habana.
A partir del triunfo de la Revolución Cubana en enero de 1959, la base naval de Guantánamo se convierte en un centro de compilación contra el joven Estado revolucionario.
En los alrededores de la base naval de Guantánamo surgieron más de 20 bandas contrarrevolucionarias. Desde la base naval de Guantánamo se le daba el aseguramiento logístico, se le daba la preparación militar por las fuerzas de la inteligencia naval.
Por otra parte, la base fue, desde esos primeros años, un punto de enfrentamiento, puesto que las Fuerzas Armadas de los Estados Unidos y las Fuerzas Armadas de Cuba están frente a frente en este punto del territorio nacional, y desde allí se produjeron, a lo largo de los años 60 sobre todo, una numerosa cantidad de provocaciones que incluían desde lanzar piedras, hacer actos obscenos, provocar verbalmente o incluso llegar a disparar contra soldados cubanos que montaban guardia del lado cubano.
Y tenemos el ejemplo de Ramón López Peña y Luis Ramírez López, jóvenes de alrededor de 20 a 25 años, que fueron asesinados mientras cumplían su servicio de guardia en la frontera con la base naval. También en el caso de trabajadores que fueron torturados, un pescador también sufrió igual suerte, fue asesinado finalmente, con el objetivo de provocar, porque lo que están buscando es un pretexto para la intervención de la Fuerza Armada de los Estados Unidos. Entre los meses de marzo y abril de 1961, la contrarrevolución interna y externa recibió un fuerte golpe por parte de la Fuerza Revolucionaria Cubana.
Después de Playa Girón, fue evidente que 1.500 cubanos exiliados, contrarios a la revolución, armados y entrenados por el gobierno de los Estados Unidos, por la CIA, por las Fuerzas Armadas norteamericanas, no eran suficientes para derrumbar al régimen. De manera que Estados Unidos sabía que los cubanos anticastristas no tenían capacidad militar para hacer colapsar al gobierno cubano, a las Fuerzas Armadas cubanas. Por consiguiente, la concepción estratégica consistía en lograr crear una situación dentro de la cual se justificara que los Estados Unidos pudieran mandar sus propias Fuerzas Armadas, en las que sí confiaban, como un medio para destruir la revolución.
Hay una operación que fue muy famosa, preparada por la CIA, que tenía como objetivo provocar desde la base naval de Guantánamo un incidente con el territorio que ocupaban las fuerzas cubanas, las fuerzas militares cubanas.
La idea estaba conectada con un atentado para asesinar a Raúl Castro, que iba a hablar en Santiago de Cuba.
Pretendían tirarle con bazucas a Raúl Castro y a la población que estaba concentrada en el acto del 26 de julio en Santiago de Cuba. Incluso había una segunda variante de asesinar al ministro de la FARC, que era Raúl, si fallaba la primera operación, en la carretera al aeropuerto de Santiago de Cuba.
Esa operación se preparó por la CIA utilizando varios de los contrarrevolucionarios cubanos de estas bandas que operaban en los alrededores de la base naval de Guantánamo.
Inmediatamente esos supuestos soldados cubanos lanzaría un ataque contra la base naval, y esto se presentaría como un arrebato, como una acción enloquecida por el dolor de la muerte de Raúl Castro, que hubiera decretado Fidel Castro. Esta era la escena, la obra de teatro.
Falla ante todo por la efectividad y la experiencia que había logrado la seguridad cubana.
¿Has the base ever been used as a base from which to organize assassination attempts against Cuban politicians?
Not to my knowledge.
Es conocida la llamada Operación Mangosta, y la Operación Mangosta tenía entre sus objetivos la voladura de un buque norteamericano dentro de la base naval de Guantánamo, o el derribo sobre territorio de la base naval de Guantánamo de un avión de pasajeros norteamericanos con estudiantes a bordo, para que eso sirviera de justificación a la intervención militar norteamericana. Es algo así como volver al Maine, al pretexto del Maine, como justificación para una intervención militar en los sucesos de Cuba.
Hasta no hace mucho tiempo, pocos años atrás, habían provincias y personas, y quizás hasta dirigentes que desconocían de que aquí en Guantánamo entraban y salían todavía trabajadores cubanos.
Desde que se estableció la base naval de Guantánamo, el gobierno de los Estados Unidos, para los trabajos de servicio, mantenimiento y los trabajos manuales de la instalación, buscó mano de obra barata en Cuba y en el resto de los países del área.
He calculado que durante el siglo XX han trabajado en la base alrededor de 50.000 cubanos. Es decir, son varias generaciones de cubanos que, buscando su sustento familiar, han acudido a las instalaciones y por lo tanto contribuir a resolver sus situaciones familiares.
Mi papá trabajaba 3 meses nada más en el central y después luchando. Cuando caí allí es que pude ayudar a mi familia.
En un tiempo nos decían que éramos comunistas y cuando íbamos para allá nos decíamos que eran imperialistas. Así que caíamos mal allá y caíamos mal aquí. Entonces se fueron comprendiendo que no es así, que somos neutral.
Mi último día de trabajo en la base naval, el 28 de diciembre de 2012.
La Rosa y yo siempre estábamos comentando, ¿quién iba a pensar que íbamos a ser los dos últimos en salir de aquí? ¿Te entiendes? Y más él y yo, porque él tiene su carácter y yo tengo el mío. No coinciden mucho, muchas cosas no coinciden.
Fue un momento histórico porque ya se cierra la frontera, automáticamente se cierra. Porque al no entramos nosotros, pues ya no hay obrero que entre allí, así que ya está cerrada.
¿Por qué todavía sigue la base naval ahí? Porque ya es momento de poder buscar un acuerdo entre los hombres, entre las naciones, que ellos entreguen la base naval.
Eso debería de ser de nosotros, no de ellos. Y ahí están oprimiendo y están saliendo informaciones que no deben de salir.
Ahí, según la historia, ¿no? Existe playa, que no, pues, si la tuviésemos, fuésemos una provincia bastante... con acceso a esa playa, ¿no?
Es decir, muchas veces se habla del aspecto político, el aspecto militar, pero no hablamos del aspecto económico. Imaginémonos, digamos, San Francisco, o imaginemos California sin la bahía de San Francisco. Bueno, eso es lo que pasa con Guantánamo.
Finalmente, en este momento, no es una base naval, es un territorio en donde Estados Unidos ha puesto una cárcel que le permite tener prisioneros al margen de la propia ley norteamericana.
The United States argued in the Supreme Court, U.S. laws don't apply in Guantánamo because Guantánamo is a Cuban sovereign territory.
Desde el punto de vista estrictamente jurídico, lo que pase allí está pasando en un territorio extranjero, puesto que técnicamente Cuba sigue teniendo soberanía sobre ese territorio. Eso es lo que explica que ahí esté la cárcel ahora.
It's very easy to do whatever they want to do with these prisoners without anybody looking, supervising or controlling what's happening there.
Han elegido ponerlos ahí porque eso es un limbo jurídico que les permite mantenerlos indefinidamente en esa posición.
Y nos causa indignación precisamente que vinculen a esta hermosa ciudad, a sus nobles ciudadanos, precisamente con la cárcel internacional imperialista que tienen establecida en la base naval de Guantánamo.
El problema con la base no es un problema ideológico. El problema con la base es un problema que tiene que ver con la soberanía, que es otro problema, con el derecho internacional, que es otro campo, y con la necesidad y la facultad de Cuba como país para recuperar su territorio soberano.
Cuba no tiene relaciones diplomáticas con los Estados Unidos, no por porque Cuba no quiera, es el gobierno de los Estados Unidos el que no desea las relaciones diplomáticas con Cuba. El bloqueo económico contra Cuba persiste y mucho más que eso, el gobierno de los Estados Unidos insiste en mantener a Cuba en la lista de países que patrocinan el terrorismo. Entonces, si insiste en esta política de hostilidad, nosotros no podemos pensar que la base naval de Guantánamo, la presencia de la base naval de Guantánamo, sea verlo como un hecho normal, como un hecho cotidiano.
To get back the base is not a question of principle. It's a question of principle in the long term, but not in the short term. In the short term, what we should do is try to avoid any use of the base for military purposes against Cuba, and that's contained.
Sería el maine que ellos han querido justificar durante más de 50 años de revolución y que no han podido lograrlo.
Much, much younger, I used to hear this song called Guantanamera, and I didn't know because of its cadence that it was actually Guantanamera. I thought it was just $1 mirror. And as time went on and I eventually got to Guantanamo and I heard some of the guards singing the song, I realized that this is the song that I used to hear as a child. Guantanamera is the woman, the girl from Guantanamo. So I guess that was my first ever subconscious knowledge of Guantanamo.
Welcome to Camp 6. It was originally constructed in 2006 at a cost of $37 million.
Coming off of it, there are four blocks. Each block has both an upper and a lower tier, and each tier has between 12 and 14 cells. If you follow me this way, I'll show you a standard cell. Every individual in the facility is on either a 1 or a 3 minute check. Every compliant individual in the facility is offered a minimum of 4 hours of media time per week.
Ill treatment is something that I think everybody in Guantanamo has suffered. There's not anybody who's been held in Guantanamo would say that I was treated very, very nicely in the way I should have been. In addition to that, religious abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, being held in solitary confinement for extendedly long periods, 2-3 years at a time.
This is a standard cell in Camp 5. It meets all the American Correctional Association standards. The top display are basic issued items for compliant detainees, and the bottom display are for non-compliant.
The people who kidnapped me, the word I use, and I have to say kidnapped because there was no police present. This was not a legal operation. This was very much a kidnap. These people were Pakistanis, but they were also Americans present physically, and I believe that they were the ones who were orchestrating everything that was going on.
We do offer them laundry services twice a week. However, some of them elect to do their own laundry, so we've installed these drying hooks, which are designed to give way at 40 pounds pressure. That reduces the possibility of any unintended consequence.
First I was held in Pakistan, and then I was sent to Kandahar. And the process of being handed over by the Pakistanis to the Americans meant being beaten and put into a bowing position, stripped naked. I was being dragged through the mud by American soldiers and being punched and kicked, stripped naked again, and photographed and shackled and spat on and shaved forcibly. That was my introduction to America.
What the United States did after 9/11 when it began capturing prisoners was that it was determined not to give them rights under the Geneva Conventions as prisoners of war, and also was not interested in pursuing a traditional criminal complaint against people that it captured who were allegedly involved in terrorism. So, you know, the United States wanted to hold people as enemy combatants, people who had no rights, so that they could do whatever they felt was appropriate.
The purpose of Guantanamo primarily is law of war detention. The detainees here are removed from the battlefield, removed from the fight. They're not here to be charged. They're not here in anticipation of charge. They're not here because they're accused of criminal wrongdoing. They're accused and maintained here as unprivileged belligerents, kept off the battlefield as prisoners of war.
The bottom line when you ask what legal arguments are made for justifying the prisoners' detention in Guantanamo is actually that's coming from the wrong end. They just say they don't have any rights. So one of the problems with Guantanamo Bay from the very beginning is the Bush administration argued the US Constitution doesn't apply there. That's why we put these people on this island that's not America. And by the way, we as America have never signed any international convention that's enforceable against us. So these people have no legal rights.
And the Geneva Convention?
You tell me which court the Geneva Convention is applicable in, and you've got to have a place to enforce it. So the US hasn't signed up to the ICC, the International Criminal Court, so you can't sue them there. They haven't signed up to anything that you can enforce in the International Court of Justice. The American courts say they don't have jurisdiction.
Are we in Cuba at the moment, or the US?
We're in Cuba. It's a US Navy base, but it's in Cuba in a leased piece of land. It's not part of the United States in so many terms, you know, as far as we don't own the land, let's put it that way.
So it's very, very hard in all but the most limited cases to get any legal rights for the prisoners. And that's why the law has played such a small role in Guantanamo Bay.
Oh, well, it was chosen so that it would be beyond the reach of the United States courts. And when you realize that it was cynically chosen for that purpose, you have to say, well, if that was the purpose, then what was the United States trying to do, holding people where lawyers and judges wouldn't be able to have any jurisdiction?
So right here, these are the older cell blocks. So these were the original cell blocks over here. They're basically an 8x8 cell, cage all the way around it. These showers were used when the detainees were first brought in as a de-lousing station. So they would come in here and they would cleanse the detainees. So in this area and these two guard shacks were used to let the guards have a place to hang out before they had to go on their tours, and they would walk the camps and do their patrols. And also it was used as the internal security force in case something bad were to happen.
Well, I would say there are three categories of prisoner in Guantanamo, essentially. There are a very small number of people who are allegedly involved in acts of international terrorism. And honestly, that seems to be no more than a few dozen at the most of the people who've been held. There are many hundreds of other prisoners who were involved in military activity. So to some extent, they were either fighting with the Taliban or they were in a support position for the Taliban in their struggle against the Northern Alliance before the 9/11 attacks. And this is obviously Muslims against Muslims. What the hell does that have to do with 9/11 and international terrorism and Al-Qaeda? And it basically has nothing to do with it. The rest of the people are either people who are in Afghanistan or Pakistan for reasons completely unconnected to any kind of militant activity. People who were in the area for reasons of humanitarian aid, or as missionaries, or as economic migrants. But I would say that, you know, the main things are the humanitarian aid workers and the charity workers who made up, I would say, hundreds of the prisoners who were captured.
Do you think it's just that there are prisoners here who, after having been kidnapped, have been imprisoned here for over a decade without ever having been charged or facing trial?
Yeah, I think that the given how those detainees have been classified and how we view them as those facing prosecution, some, you know, law of war detainees, and then some that are actually prisoners, then it's absolutely appropriate for them to be down here in this facility. Yeah.
What is indefinite detention?
Indefinite detention would be like you're not charged with anything, you
are not accused. Well, you're not charged with anything. You're just detained somewhere, but it's like nothing's going on. You're just gonna stay there.
Is that taking place at Guantanamo?
I wouldn't know. I mean, definitely, it's only been 12 years. You know, so indefinite, like, if it's generation after generation after generation, and my kids, kids, and kids, kids, and you ask them the same question, then it'd probably be a lot easier to answer, other than, hey, it's been 12 years and there's still legal battles going on. Are they detained indefinitely? I'd have to say no.
Of the 166 men still held, President Obama designated 46 of them for indefinite detention without charge or trial. He did that himself in an executive order in March 2011. Now, everybody else is accidentally detained indefinitely without charge or trial. But the only people that he is personally responsible for having designated for indefinite detention without charge or trial are those 46 men. Now, the fact that it's only 46 men is supposed to, you know, amongst reasonable people, we're supposed to say, yeah, but it's hardly anybody, you know, and it's part of the problem that he inherited from Bush of these, you know, I'm sure they're all dangerous. He says they are, and, you know, we know terrible things happen, but they must be bad guys, which is why he can't release them. I don't think that's true, but B, even if it's only 46 people, he owns this policy of indefinitely detaining them, and that shouldn't be happening under any circumstances. Of the 166 men still held, 86 of them were approved for transfer out of Guantanamo.
That's 52% of the prisoners there have been told they're cleared for release. Sometimes the US has got upset when we've referred to it as the Guantanamo gulag. But frankly, there was never a gulag in Soviet Russia where 52% of the prisoners had been told they were cleared for release, but they couldn't go home.
Are there innocent people who are imprisoned here at Guantanamo?
Yeah, once again, I'm going to leave that up to the process. Once again, we've got a lot of people working that. We've got processes in place to determine that. As long as, you know, we are told to keep them here, then I'm quite confident, that we can do that well.
I don't know what the reason for my release was from Guantanamo to this day, other than the fact that there were no charges after 3 years of interrogations and torture. There's never been an apology or an acknowledgement that a crime was committed against me or any of the prisoners. No, they've never acknowledged that we were tortured or beaten or abused and that a crime was committed against us by the governments. The only thing that's happened so far is former US ministers and former US soldiers and former US generals have offered apologies.
We both know there are prisoners that are being held here, some of which have been held for over a decade, mm-hmm. which the US government themselves have admitted mm-hmm. that they don't have a shred of evidence against them, yeah. and also that have been cleared for release. Why are those prisoners still being held here?
Well, to your point about cleared for release, it's not really the exact term we use. We use cleared for transfer.
They use the words approved for transfer rather than cleared for release, because obviously there are lawyers telling them cleared for release, you know, makes it sound like they might have a case against us. It's all very carefully worded. Approved for transfer meant that they weren't saying that these were innocent people. They weren't accepting any responsibility for capturing people by mistake. They weren't even necessarily saying that they were going to be released outright.
So they're cleared for a transfer to specific or already determined specific countries, or, you know, in the future will be determined what country they go to based on the conditions of those countries.
This is not who America likes to think it is. This is not who America pretends it is or likes to think it is. Holding people indefinitely without charge or trial is something that totalitarian regimes do, and America doesn't like to think that it's like that.
I've said this before, and I really mean it, that when I was spending 25 years in America, I represented a lot of people on death row, and I went to most of the death rows in the deep south of the United States. Guantanamo Bay is worse than any death row in America, and it's worse for two reasons. One is because, frankly, the prisoners are physically abused in Guantanamo in ways that would be unthinkable on the American mainland. But the second, which actually has the greater impact, is that the psychological abuse of telling a prisoner, you're cleared for release, but you can't go, and we're not going to tell you when you can go, and you might stay here forever, is traumatic in the extreme to prisoners.
The hunger strikes have been taking place in Guantanamo right from the beginning, and the prisoners use it as a weapon or as a tool in order to get some of their rights. Primarily, hunger strikes took place because of the detention without trial. That's the real reason why anybody's doing it.
We'd take the patient to the restraint chair, then restrain the patient. Once the patient's restrained for safety, then the medical group would take over and then proceed with the enteral feeding process.
The present one that's taking place now is one of the longest, and it's also the largest number of prisoners hunger striking.
What was underlying that was the very understandable despair, actually, that many of these men were feeling after 11 years, that they weren't getting out of Guantanamo. There was no way they were getting out of Guantanamo unless they were dead.
Sometimes they will put up a little bit of resistance for the guards for movement, but most of them, and that's very rare itself, once they get into the chair, they're very compliant.
It's measured from the nose to the ear down to about the xiphoid process, roughly 40 centimeters or so, depending on the detainee.
The whole force-feeding thing is an anathema to me. I mean, look, first you've got the issue of whether you should force-feed a competent person at all. And for years, we've respected people who go on a hunger strike for a protest, a non-violent, peaceful protest. It's really all the prisoners can do. And the World Medical Association said in 1975, it's unethical for doctors to be involved in force-feeding someone who competently doesn't want to be force-fed.
I didn't understand whether it was force-feeding.
Negative, enteral feeding.
It's not force feeding.
Correct. We're going to use the term enteral feeding, okay. And that's it.
Most of the detainees will let us know which side to put it in, and they'll direct the whole process.
So that's why it's not force feeding.
Correct. That's a choice that they're making.
We're on firm legal and medical grounds when we do the procedure down here. We're doing a procedure that we did not. Invent down here at Guantanamo Bay.
The military is very good at keeping hunger strikers alive at Guantanamo. There is one man who's been in a hunger strike since 2005. He's certainly been force-fed daily since January 2006 with a tube up his nose twice a day. He's still alive. Somehow this man's body is held out.
Like it or not, our mission is to safeguard these detainees, keep them alive, keep them medically healthy, and that's helping the global war on terrorism. That's what we're here for. So, yes, we are honor-bound to defend freedom. And we do that every day.
Depending on the patient, one or two cans of a various feed solution, again, depending on doctor's prescription, by our SOP or standard operating procedure, the detainee's in the restraint chair for no longer than a two-hour block of time. Average feed, again, depends on the detainee, but is roughly a half an hour of actually flow rate of the enteral feed solution.
The prisoners that I met, clearly, evidently, most of them, I'd say 99% of them, had never been to America. They had no idea what America was. But America had come to them, and it had showed them a face that they didn't know existed, because as far as they were concerned, America was this great superpower with freedom, democracy, human rights, and all of these sorts of things. But the reality was, as far as they were concerned, and their experience in life was going to be that America is an oppressor, it is an abuser, it is a torturer, it is in some cases, a murderer at a grand scale, at an international level.
What does freedom mean to you?
What it means to me, it means,
as long as it's not hurting or taking away from someone else.
That's an awesome definition. I'll have to agree with that one.
The safety of yourself, safety of your family, safety of your loved ones.
But at the same time, it also means that every other individual has those same rights, and that my quote-unquote freedom cannot impinge upon theirs, and theirs isn't them depends upon me.
I think freedom is probably the highest organizing principle of the American society. Freedom of thought, freedom of expression, freedom to choose your leaders, democratic society. So I think freedom is probably the one thing that most U.S. service members can agree on that's important to them.
This first executive order that we are signing by the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, in order to effect the appropriate disposition of individuals currently detained by the Department of Defense at Guantanamo, and promptly to close the detention facility at Guantanamo consistent with the national security and foreign policy interests of the United States and the interests of justice, I hereby order.
President Obama promised when he took office in January 2009 to close Guantanamo within a year, and then failed to fulfill that promise. One of his plans for closing the prison was to move prisoners from Guantanamo to a prison that he was hoping to buy in Illinois, but it didn't happen. The Congress blocked President Obama from buying a prison. They blocked his ability to move prisoners to the US mainland to face trials. They then imposed bans and legislation preventing him from bringing prisoners to the United States for any reason. And then in the last couple of years, they imposed restrictions on the release of prisoners to anywhere. These are serious obstructions, but to let President Obama off the hook is not really acceptable because he is the President of the United States.
I think it is critical for us to understand that Guantanamo is not necessary to keep America safe. It is expensive. It is inefficient. It hurts us in terms of our international standing. It lessens cooperation with our allies on counterterrorism efforts. It is a recruitment tool for extremists. It needs to be closed. Now, Congress determined that they would not let us close it.
There was a waiver in this terrible legislation passed by Congress, which enables him to release prisoners without consulting Congress if he believes that it's in the national security interests of the United States to do so. When he's spoken about Guantanamo, he always fails to mention that he has this magic card that he can play. He has been saying how the continued existence of Guantanamo and indefinite detention is a shame for the United States, but he won't act. But without him doing it, we will end up with the widespread presumption and accurate presumption that he doesn't mean what he says, that he says great things, but that he has no intention of actually fulfilling them.
It's not that difficult to close Guantanamo Bay. First, you take the 86 people who we agree should be released, and we release them. Then you've got the other prisoners, another 80 people. Now, you've either got to try them or you've got to set them free, and you've got to give them a proper trial. And there is nothing that prevents the U.S. from giving them proper, civil, American trials, either in America or in Guantanamo Bay, where they have real trials, not these military commissions. That could be done. And then if you convict them, you convict them, and you put them in a prison. But if you don't convict them, you've got to set them free. That's all there is to it.
The president, first of all, needs to create the climate that ensures that the world recognizes that these men are innocent. So all he needs to say, instead of saying that Guantanamo is no good for us, it doesn't do it, it's against our ideals, what he should simply say is that these people are innocent. And the moment he says they're innocent, people will start thinking, oh my goodness, let's welcome these people back. Countries to where these prisoners can't go for fear of torture or execution will start welcoming them instead of saying we don't want these men. And once that happens, the process of closing Guantanamo or emptying the place of Guantanamo becomes so much easier.
If they don't do something, this will go on forever. And that's the problem. Guantanamo doesn't have a time limit on it. These guys don't have a sentence that they finish. The war doesn't end. Without something happening, in 10 years' time, it's going to be there. In 20 years' time, in 30 years' time, it's going to be there. And one by one, these guys who were, you know, what, the average age of them when they arrived was what, their early 20s? They're going to die. They're going to die decades from now, some of them. But they will. When you stand back and look at it, the longer this prison goes on, the worse it is for their long-term reputation. So I hope that that will lead to something, but I can see that the impulse of American political life is to do nothing.
How do you feel when you hear that music?
Patriotic. You're not going to get much more out of me of that.
Gives you a little reminder of what you're fighting for.
It reminds me of playing sports, being at a ball game. It reminds me of serving my country.
Freedom?
It reminds me of freedom. Absolutely.
Closing down of the Guantanamo prison has been requested by Amnesty International in May 2005, by the United Nations in February 2006, and the European Union in the May of the same year. But almost a decade on, nothing has been done by the United States, a country that ironically considers itself the defendant of human rights in the world. And that's it for this week on Aperture. You can find today's documentary on our website at www.presstv.ir. Please contact us by sending your emails to documentary@presstv.ir or simply follow us on Twitter or Facebook. Thank you for watching, and until next week and another episode of Aperture, it's goodbye.